I'll call the meeting to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but we are on TV, so we don't want to leave blank time for our time to be here, for those of us who are here on time. We will wait on the minutes, but and we'll wait on moving your bill, Representative Rukavina. But welcome to the committee. We started, as you know, yesterday with the permanent school trust lands, and we heard Representative Dietrich's bills, Representative Garofalo's bills, and we're going to continue on with that discussion this afternoon. Do we have a quorum? Oh, good. Well, then, if you could just take a second, we'll just do the minutes real quickly. I'll Rep. Benson, would you like to move the minutes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for February 26, 2008.
Thank you. Rep. Benson moves the minutes. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. And we'll continue our discussion with the Permanent School Trust Lands, and I will move House File 3206 for you, Representative Rukavina. We're glad to have you here. It's a perfect beginning when we're on TV to have a colorful TV star. And why don't you go ahead with your bill?
Well, Madam Chair, I don't want to disappoint you, so I'll take off my shoe and start pounding on the desk. but really, it's a pleasure to be here on an issue that that came to my attention 21 years ago, right? Probably about a month earlier, 21 years ago, when I offered what I thought was an innocent amendment that then-Representative Lona Min, who many of you know as Lona Schreiber now, told me to offer this amendment dealing with lakeshore lots, and mostly in northern Minnesota, that were on school trust land. Well, it got me in trouble with the then-chair of the Education Committee, and at that time, the Finance Committee had to go through the Policy Committee. So it was the Policy Chair that had most of the power, but I had both the Finance Chair and the Policy Chair all over me. And we had, in order to sell those lakeshore lots, we ended up going to auctions, and people lost their cabins that they had had for a couple of generations, and it was terrible. So I started looking into the whole issue of the school trust, and it's been something I've kept an eye on for 21 years, and I'm glad, Madam Chair, and I compliment you and Representative Dietrich and Representative Garofalo and others for looking at an issue I've been asking this committee to look at for 21 years. You know, I don't have to tell you the size of the fund and where most of the money came from. And in fact, I'm a little disappointed that Governor Pawlenty has now gone into the mineral royalties, which never were tapped before by the Department of Natural Resources, as were timber sales, but that's a whole other issue I think that has to be addressed. I'm only here today because Representative Dietrich, I think, is correct in saying that instead of just taking this money, which is approximately $30 million a year from the interest, that used to be more, but we've tried to build that fund up, and so plowed some of that money or put it into longer-term investments, from what I understand. But to take that money and do something special with it. You know, the Permanent University Fund, they also have royalties from minerals and timber, just as the Permanent School Fund has. And under the Purpose Administration, came to the legislature with a suggestion. And their suggestion was similar to yours, that instead of just putting this on our bottom line after you give us an appropriation, let us do something creative with it. And with that idea, I think Representative Carlson was the author, and they created the endowed chair account with that money.
Representative Rukavina, he's right behind you, and he's indicated yes, he was.
Oh, I'm complimenting him. I didn't even know that. And what that proposal did then was, I believe Representative Carlson can nod if it's true, that with a match from the private sector with that money, that they established these endowed chairs that basically are the professors that we hear about that do all the research that brings in the federal and private grant dollars and keeps Minnesota's University of Minnesota up there as one of the top research institutions in the country. So what I've tried to do is take the money and use it for technology. And Madam Chair, I don't know, did you get runs that Mr. Strom did for
Representative Corvino, we have them in our packet, and I would also point out to members that we do have also in the packet the fiscal note that would apply to any of these bills if we're separating out the permanent school fund. You can see the cost of it to the general fund. So if we're going to separate it out and not have the offset, we do have to pay for it on a one-time basis.
Well, what I did with this was thinking how we could do it and it would be fair, you know, across the state, and so I
asked... Excuse me just a minute. It wouldn't be one time. I'm just looking at the thing
right
here, and it goes, every year it's a cost.
Yes. And so I asked Mr. Strom to come up a way using a funding formula similar to the Minnesota Miracle, where everybody would be required to make the same effort locally. And I also asked Mr. Strom to tell me what was going on as far as technology grants, and I believe he indicated that there were $45 or $50 in last year's bill, something like that. So, and there was an inflationary factor, or I think it was one time. So we put an inflationary factor here, started off at $60, of which $28 per student would be on the levy statewide, and $32 would come from the interest off the trust fund, and then required a formula based on property wealth, and the chart basically does that. It shows you what the effects would be on school districts that you represent. And I will say that I believe everyone gets money from the trust fund appropriation, except a few really rich cabin wealth districts that whose levy, incidentally, would be lower than the other districts anyway, because of their the wealth that they have because of cabins in their school district. So, you know, there's the, like I said, I think there's an inflation factor in here, Mr. Strom. I don't, it's tied to, is it to the consumer price index?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bukovina, it's tied to the growth in the permanent school fund money.
Okay. And so, Madam Chair, basically that's the bill. It's, I thought about what the university did, requiring a match, and you know, I thought about fairness because there are a lot of school districts that are extremely property poor. Many of them are happen to be in my district, although if you look at my district in the 700s, I believe most of them are requiring to raise around $20 or so locally also. So a few are less than that. But I thought it was the fair way to do it, and I'm no expert on K-12 funding. But I probably have to say that I know as much as anybody around here, except staff perhaps, about the school trust fund. Where it came from, how it's been used, how it's been abused. Ask me any questions, I'll tell you. So, with that, Madam Chair, that's my bill, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Corvino. We know you're an expert on this, and we keep having to deal with you about it on the House floor, so that's part of the reason we're discussing it and studying it, so we can all have a better understanding and try to do right by the school children. So I appreciate you're not only taking an interest, helping with our task force, but also coming up with your own bill. Representative Swales has a question.
Representative Rukavina, I asked this question of the DNR yesterday, but since you seem to have been involved in this issue for a long time, I am looking at the amount of money that they say we are currently receiving from the trust fund. It was like 4%, I believe, is what is generated each year from that. In your examination of these funds, have you felt that there's been adequate discussion or even discussion at all of ways to make these properties more profitable by leasing them for more entrepreneurial kinds of activities such as wind energy or other things besides timber and ore?
Representative Corvino.
Well, you know, let me just say this first of all, and I had a brief discussion, I think, with Representative Garofalo yesterday, but if you look at the corpus of the trust, it's lands that the school children continue to own that have generated the most wealth, and I believe about 5% of the corpus is from the sale of land in the whole state. As when we became a state as a condition of statehood, that's the term I was looking for, Representative Garofalo. condition of statehood. The federal government gave us two sections of land in every township, 16 and 36, and I don't think north of Hinckley is the only place those sections are left. And the sale of those public lands went, and they were auctioned off, and you know, in the way they're supposed to be. But the sale only has generated 5% of the corpus. It's your mineral wealth, timber wealth, gravel wealth that have made money. And I think wind is a good example. But the problem is, and this is just my personal opinion and observing it for 21 years, is that the Department of Natural Resources has a role in managing lands that is different than the role of what this land is supposed to do. And so there's some confusion, and I'll give you a very good example. We were trying to locate some, a person in my district working on wind energy on the Laurentian Divide near where the LTD plant is recently shut down in 2001, and it was, they put some anemometers, is that what they're called? Anemometers that measure wind? I don't know. Dabney, you're smarter than me. Is it an anemometer?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. But anyway, they put them up, and there was already a logging road here, so they didn't want to disturb anything, and they invested in this, and the DNR knew what they were doing, and then all of a sudden, they said, well, you know, the readings are really, really good, and we'd like to start the process to put a windmill there. Well, school trust land, you got to hit on it. All of a sudden, you know, well, there should have been some criteria on how, you know, why would they let somebody put up something and then tell them, well, we can't compensate you for the money you spent on that. It seems like, you know, and then they wanted to do a study on birds hitting windmills. And I said, well, wait a second now. I don't think the school trust should have to do a study on birds hitting windmills. Why didn't the DNR require when windmills were going up on Buffalo Ridge? Because it was on private property, so all of a sudden when it's on the kids' property, they want to use some money to do a study on birds hitting windmills. Well, you know, it's the confusion, and I don't know how to answer your question to tell you more other than perhaps there should be some serious consideration given to who does manage these lands, because in other states, they've recognized the, I don't know if you call it conflict of interest, I wouldn't say that. There's a lot of good people, and I will, in front of this committee, say Marty Vadas is a really good guy who's a very competent gentleman and who has been working diligently. I think we've got most of the lands out of the state parks now, which we've been yelling about as rangers for years, been yelling about it, and he's working on this. But, you know, is their mission to protect wildlife or to raise revenue for the school trust? And that's the decision that I've asked this committee to take over the jurisdiction of for 21 years, because I still, for the life of me, can't figure out why the school trust and all of its policies is in the Natural Resources and Environment Committee when it's a education finance issue. So that's all I can tell you, and I promised the DNR the other day I'd kind of behave when I came to come here. So that's the other part of my answer.
Thank you very much. Representative Dabney.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I'll address this to Representative Rukavina, although Representative Dietrich might, or Brafley might also be appropriate. And I apologize. I'm not going to apologize for inviting you not to be good to DNR today. But I'm going to apologize that I wasn't here for all of yesterday's presentation. And I don't have the handouts from yesterday with me. But the committee is focused on, okay, what happens to the revenue coming out of the school trust land? The trust fund, excuse me, and that's appropriate. But the information I thought we saw yesterday also was the DNR is creaming off a huge amount of money before it even gets into the trust fund. And I haven't heard in the discussions, and maybe I simply haven't been in the room when the explanation has been given, how the DNR justifies taking so much of the money to manage the trust fund and to manage the trust land. The FBI is able to manage $700 million for $20,000 a year. Now, they're very different tasks, I recognize, but the DNR has to have some efficiencies in how they manage public lands, and I'm wondering, Representative Rukavina or Dietrich or Garofalo, is there an issue in how much administrative overhead the DNR charges back to the school trust funds.
Representative Rukavina.
No. Let me try to continue on my nice Tommy mode for today and answer that. I guess the fact that I think it's about 82 or 84%, and Mr. Strom probably knows the answer better than me, of the $700 million is there because it's mineral royalties where the DNR charged the mining companies outside of the trust fund. We don't have a mineral suspense account until 3 years ago, for lack of a better word, I'd call it that. But for 120 years approximately, we never let them touch those mineral royalties. They put a fee on top. They put a fee on the mining companies and charge them outside of the fund. It's different with the timber sales. There were many years where they sold a lot of timber, a few million dollars or more worth of timber, and didn't put anything into the trust. And, you know, maybe they were improving, maybe they were growing giant trees. I don't know what they were doing with it. But I think there could have been a little better management, but I think it's because the DNR has, in statute, authority, or not authority, but a responsibility to make sure when they cut trees that wildlife isn't hampered and the ecology isn't. So there's where I'm talking about the confusion. Because if they, maybe it was the Department of Administration monitoring it, their role would be to maximize the amount, and they would hire a silviculturist, let's say, for the timber sales, whose only job would be which trees should we maximize to cut, which ones are healthy, which ones aren't going downhill, and we should get rid of them so healthier trees grow, and here's how much stumpage was sold, and here's what it's worth, and pay up. But I think those other issues get clouded in there, so the wildlife people have to come in, and the ecological services or whatever has to come in, and the hydrologist probably has to come in, and everything gets charged back to, along with administrative fees and everything else, to the forestry suspense account.
And,
and I'm not blaming, Madam Chair, I'm not blaming the DNR for but anyway, I'm not blaming them because they have, you know, laws they have to follow in different parts of statutes. But there's where the policy decision I've been asking this committee to make for 29 years comes in. And you've had legislative auditors' reports that Representative Carlson put in for me back in the 90s, late 90s, that, you know, have suggested and shown other states where, you know, they manage. And as an example, let me just give you a quick example on school trust land in New
Very
Mexico.
Quick, because we have some out-of-town guests we need to get to.
You know, when the, I think it was the Nature Conservancy in New Mexico, complained about the school trust land renting out land to cattle farmers, then the school trust board there, and I think it's managed by admin or finance down there, said, fine, you don't like it, you bid against them. So they did. And so that was their way of preserving those grasslands. But the school trust got more money than they would have from the cattle farmers, and that's the goal of the school trust.
And Representative Dabney, since you weren't here yesterday, we did talk with the DNR about the fact that that suspense account that Representative Rukavina is mentioning was something that was tried back when Representative Secor was chair. The governor recommended that it be ended, but the Environment Committee last year, Representative McGinnis' committee kept it going because, of course, then they have more funding in their committee. So I think it's always, you know, who is skimming off? It could be the DNR, but it could be the Environment Committee, you know, from our committee. And they didn't get a lot of money in the grand scheme of things last year, so there's those kind of considerations that, you know, are internal that we have to talk about as well. But the bottom line is, these bills we're talking about here today and yesterday would give more money for schools. This fund would be more watched, and I think all of our bill authors have made a very good case that we need to do better due diligence, and these are alternatives of how we could do that. I don't see any more questions, but is there any testimony from the public on Representative Rukavina's proposal? I don't see any, but we do have one last question. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, am I tied up with the press for some reason?
Anyway,
but Representative Rukavina, you did explain the bill to me, and I'm an author in this bill, and I want to thank you for doing it. All right, it's a very good bill. Thank you,
Madam Chair. You're still a lead. You're still a lead in my eyes. Yeah.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Representative Rivera. We will lay this bill over until for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Carlson. Representative Dietrich. Apparently, I didn't see it.
Madam Chair, while we're in the transition, I'd just like to reference what Representative Dabney said. And to all fairness to the DNR, and I realize Representative Rukavina also wants to be fair to the DNR, all of their expenses are certifiable, and they do have an elaborate record-keeping system to certify all of the costs against school trust lands. But I think you still bring up a very valid point, and the DNR is very willing to work with us on that, is when you have, as Representative Rukavina pointed out, when you have an entity with a dual interest, the environment and school trust land, how do you balance those, and at any point do we share those, what point do we share those costs instead of just charge back the full cost? So there is a lot of work to be done with,
and more discussion. But I want to remind members that, tell you that I have promised a half an hour to Representative Brown. She has people that are here from southern Minnesota, so we need to budget our time today accordingly. Representative Carlson, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 2981 to be before the committee. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. And Madam Chair, always a pleasure to be back before this committee.
And a pleasure to have you here. We miss you.
But this bill I actually presented last year, and there were some technical issues that surfaced, so it was laid over. But for those of you that are not familiar, there are three intermediate school districts that are a consortium of school districts that provide special services in the suburbs surrounding the Twin Cities. There's 287, 916, and 917. They provide secondary vocational programs. They also provide special education programs for low incidence situations, and also certain academic programs. For example, out my way in 287, if they're still offering it, and I think they are, Japanese one school district alone couldn't probably offer those. So they are a consortium of school districts that actually offer educational services, is the point I want to make. And they are, in many respects, similar to our other school districts. But there is an issue that we have before us, and that's that they at times need to engage in short-term borrowing, and they do not have that authorization. And so that's what this bill would allow them to do, so they can meet their expenses for payroll and for vendors and so on. And it's a power that other school districts have, but those three do not. And I'll leave it to Ms. Carr, who is the business manager of 916, and she can do a better job than I can at this point in explaining the needs.
You did a very good job, Representative Carlson. Ms. Carr, welcome, and please state your name and title for our tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Christine Carr. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for Northeast Metro Intermediate School District 916, and as Representative Carlson talked about, he explained who we are and what we do. I'd like to add to that we serve a wide breadth of districts beyond the seven-county metro area. Currently, between the three intermediate districts, we serve over 90 non-member districts. So we do serve a lot of students that are not even members of our school district. Currently, and the reason we're here asking for this capacity to cash flow borrow is from the mid-90s up until this year, the intermediate districts have not received any state or federal funding, and we've received all of our cash by sending out bills for the services that we provide. And our cash flow has always been accommodated by doing pre-billing. Over 50% of our business or our work is in the special education arena. And so that's how we've always handled our cash flow. Now with the new special education tuition billing system that's in place, as we move on to that billing system, the capacity for us to pre-bill and cash flow our services, it has been, you know, taken away from us because we can't do our own billing. Also, we're now subject to the new 10% withhold, which, again, we never received any state aid, so we had never been subject to that. So that's another delay in the cash that we will receive. We also, because of different ways that the billing will happen with extended school year or summer school, where we would bill it immediately, you know, the month after we service those students, we would bill it out and we'd have that cash. On the new state tuition billing system, it's an 18-month delay. So we won't be billing for last summer until next September. So there are just a lot of things with the new system. As we move on to it, we're finding that we really feel we need this capacity to cash flow borrow. Currently, if we run into a cash flow situation, we'll have to go to our member districts and request cash from them. And as you're all aware, all of the member districts and all of the districts in the state are under a severe, financial stress, and we don't want to add to that stress. So we would respectfully request to have this cash flow borrowing capacity. And we have worked with the department. As Representative Carlson said last year, there were a couple of technical difficulties, and we have crafted this language in conjunction with the department this year.
Very good. And I know, we were interested in doing this last year until those technical difficulties came up. And I see we have official notes, members in our packet, and there's no cost to the state on this fiscal note. Any questions? Any testimony? All right. Thank you very much. House File 2981 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members of the committee as well.
Representative Brown, your first bill. Welcome to the committee to Mr. Aronson, and I'll let Representative Brown, who doesn't need to be welcomed, move her own bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'd like to move House File 2650. That is the Principals Leadership Institute bill, which would appropriate $400,000 to the Principals Leadership Institute.
All right, so Representative Brown moves House File 2650.
Yes.
It's in front of our committee. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The Minnesota Principals Academy is a staff development program for principals, which was initially authorized by the legislature. The legislature authorized the Department of Education to collaborate with the University of Minnesota to establish a high-end training program for principals in Minnesota. The focus is on the understanding of how to help and monitor teachers. It has a strong focus on instructional leadership as well. The program has standards that are based instruction model. The standards align with the instruction that is key and a very key element to the program. And then what I'm going to do is allow Roger Aronson to go ahead and elaborate on this a little bit.
Thank you. Mr. Aronson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association and Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. And I also might note that we have Fred Story, the Executive Director of the Elementary Association, here today, and Joanne Knuth, the Executive Director of the Secondary Association, and Julie Schweitzer, who is one of the directors of this program at the University of Minnesota. And we thank Representative Brown for bringing this bill forward for your discussion. You actually passed this last year,
yes,
and it was in the House K-12 bill. It was also in the governor's budget bill as well. And 4 years ago, it actually was a Senate initiative. And unfortunately, in the confusion at the end of last year at the session, it did not end up in the bill, and that's why we're back here again. This is one of those marvelous programs that when an idea blossomed and it was put into play, the results have been spectacular. The initial group of principals that were involved in this, there are 48 people. This is a national curriculum that's developed from the National Center on Education and the Economy. It's actually called the National Institute of School Leadership, or NISL, as we try to say these things. The principals that have been involved in this, and you can see some of the quotes in the brochure that the staff has made available for you, have been very excited about this. And it's a very practical staff development that involves not only training in long-range planning and in communication, but also basically in aligning your curriculum to state standards and in an effort to really enforce instructional leadership, encourage instructional leadership. So we're really happy about this. The university has been a great home for this. They've done an excellent job of administering this, and they have worked hard to expand it into Duluth and into southern Minnesota. Mr. Paquel, who is part of this as well, has worked with several higher ed institutions around the state to try to make the offering statewide. So we're very pleased with this program, Madam Chair, and we hope that notwithstanding whatever happens tomorrow, that there might be room somewhere to bridge us through the rest of the year.
Thank you, Mr. Arnson. And if there is money tomorrow, well, we don't know if there's money, but if there's any way before the end of session, this is a project that I felt very bad that we didn't get the fund. And there was huge confusion at the end of session, but there was also half of the amount of money that we started out with by the time we got done, and that was a big part of the confusion as well. But this is a wonderful project that I did get a chance to see it in action, and it really leverages our money very well because it's a train-the-trainer model, and the few that get to go to it get to spread the good word when they go out amongst the many. So thank you. Any questions from the members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question, Ms. Erickson, would be because I don't think we're going to have even $400,000 that we can use, and I really like this, and I've talked to some of the principals who've gone through the training and know it's really going to be invaluable once more of them get, you know, committed to this. Is it possible to form a partnership? Well, maybe I can't even call it a partnership at this point, but to get some funding from an outside source until we get past, you know, I think the uphill battle we're going to be experiencing in these next the rest of this year and the next biennium.
Mr. Arnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I think it is accurate to say that the folks at the U, the folks at the department, the two school principals associations, and we've had Representative Chairman Greiling was with the elementary principals 2 weeks ago, that if we're unable to find money in the budget anywhere to do this, that we will do everything we can and look under every couch cushion possible to find some money to keep this program alive.
Thank you very much. I don't see any more questions. Any testimony from the audience?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and we appreciate all the esteemed people sitting in a row back there. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Brown, we'll lay over House File 2650 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And now we have Representative Poppy to help present Representative Brown with House File 2559. And before we actually have you present the bill, you can stay up there, but if you could make room for Mr. Melcher, who is going to help our committee to understand and put in context the request. If you could let him have a microphone. Okay. Welcome, Mr. Melcher. I asked him to come because we have a lot of different types of tax credits that affect the education funding, and this is one that the governor's office made a recommendation last year that we eliminate, and the legislature accepted. And so I thought we should refresh our memories as to why we considered this last year before we look at Representative Brown and Representative Poppy's and Representative Demers' bill. He's up there now too. Proposal to put it back again. And so, Mr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Tom Melcher. I'm the Finance Director at the Department of Education. The wind energy issue really has two parts that affect school districts. I think the part that's addressed in this bill and in the legislation that was enacted last year was the production tax on wind energy. There's a certain tax per based on the amount of power that's generated, and the school districts receive 6% of the amount of the tax that's generated within their school district.
Thank you.
There is also another provision that I think in some cases school districts have confused with this provision, but we have a number of school districts that have chosen to invest in wind energy projects, and this bill doesn't relate to that, doesn't affect the ability of school districts to invest in those kinds of projects. Really, two separate sorts of issues. I think the background for the legislation that was proposed by the governor last year kind of goes back to the general concepts of school finance, that as we allocate revenue to school districts, the general principle is that the revenue should be allocated based on measures of student need or school district need. So we allocate funding based on the number of students in the school district. We allocate money based on special characteristics, such as students that are eligible for free or reduced price lunches, students, English language learners, cost of special education, and so forth. And we try to stay away from allocations of revenue to school districts that are not based on student need. Those are generally viewed as being disequalizing. And in this particular case, the school districts where the wind energy turbines are located are receiving additional revenue above and beyond the other funding formulas based on 6% of the tax that's paid within their particular school district. And so it generates some additional revenue. Right now it's very small, about $100,000 across the state. So it doesn't have any large significant impact, but we think it's an area that will have a potential for some very large increases in the future. The state in the past has had a long-standing practice of when a school district receives miscellaneous funds from the county, there's a reduction for the general education aid for the school district, so that we're kind of maintaining the integrity of the school funding system, allocating money based on student needs. And so it's called the county apportionment subtraction. It's about a $14 million reduction to the general education aid each year. And that includes things like power line taxes, that if the school district happens to have a power line running through it, there are some tax collections that go from the county to the school district. There are also some miscellaneous fines, late payments of real estate taxes, and so forth, that are kind of miscellaneous revenues that come from the county to the school district. And because they're not related to student need within the school district, the state's longstanding practice has been, since we want every school district to get the same general education formula amount per student and not have one district have a significant revenue advantage over other districts as a result of whether they happen to have a power line run through their district or whether they happen to have a wind energy farm in the district. The theory was here that should be included in the county apportionment adjustment along with these other kinds of adjustments that we make. We recognize it's quite small right now. If it were to get large, though, if for example, we got to a point where this was a $300 or $500 per student in a school district, I guess the question would be, is that something that would be good public policy for the state to provide significantly more money for one district as opposed to another district because of the location of the power plant? So that was kind of the general rationale behind the recommendation.
Thank you. Mr. Melcher, what about, are there any other, you mentioned power lines are already in here now, the wind turbines would be in here. Mm-hmm. Are there any similar things that aren't in the county apportionment where districts do get to keep it? Anything with nuclear power or taconite or any? Are there some districts that we're trying to figure out how to keep with, as you know, with the Education Finance Reform Task Force, how to do the kinds of policies that you're talking about? And we're not there yet, so I'm wondering, are there any things where we don't follow this policy?
Madam Chair, in most cases, if one school district has a large property tax base advantage over another school district, it's reflected in the assessed property value as opposed to being a direct payment. So if you happen to be in a school district that has a large power plant, or you're in a district that has a lot of commercial industrial property, that's going to increase your property valuation per pupil, but it doesn't directly provide additional revenue. Unlike this kind of a situation, I would say the one, and Tim Strom may be more aware of other issues than I am, but I would say the one area where there is some revenue advantage would be the taconite area, where there are some additional dollars that go to those districts as well as some property tax relief as a result of the taconite tax.
Thank you. Mr. Tom, do you have anything to add?
Madam Chair, there are a variety of other smaller payments for different kinds of natural resources things. The department actually has been working on collecting some of these payments at the county level, but there are a variety of these resources are still out there. Some of those, as Mr. Melcher mentioned, do go into the county apportionment calculation, but others do not. And we still don't have a real complete handle on what some of those are. Certainly, taconite is the biggest of the resources that, outside of federal aid, the biggest of the resources where something that's a sort of an in lieu of payment is made as a revenue item. But there are other, there are four certain port payments, for example. You may also remember we had the stumpage levy for a few years, which was the result of the tax committee changing in the of the treatment of how logged lands were handled, where there used to be a direct payment to school districts. So there are a number of areas where there are payments from a source that's sort of an in lieu of property tax payment to school districts.
Okay. Thank you. We have two questions, and then I promised half an hour for the hearing. So we'll take those two questions, have the hearing, and I'm sure Mr. Melcher will stick around. And if we have any questions on any of these things, we can ask at the end. Representative Heidgerken and then Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You did ask my question.
Thank you, Representative Heidgerken. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll just make this more of an observation than a question. Thank you, Mr. Melcher, and I know you were answering the question as it was directed to you. I would note that operating levies do distinguish on the amount of revenue between or among school districts.
Thank you, Representative Morrow. Representative Garofalo.
Hey, just a quick comment, Madam Chair. I think hearing the bills today, I've come full circle on what the answer is, and that is we should take the permanent school fund land and, of course, build nuclear power plants on them. I think we come full circle. That's the answer today.
And we would want them to be nuclear fusion, not nuclear fission, right?
Exactly right.
A little discussion that Representative Morgan and I had yesterday. Okay, half an hour. Representative Brown, would you like to move the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'd like to move House File 2559, and that is the Wind Energy Conversion System Production Tax, school proceeds.
Okay, Representative Brown moves House File 2559. Representative Brown, and welcome Representative Poppy, and Representative Demers already on our committee as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Just briefly, this bill does reverse last year's changes and restores wind energy payments as revenue to the school district. For the fiscal year 2009, it's estimated that the wind energy payments to school districts will total about $160,000. And then in fiscal year 10, $176,000. I think I read that right. And what I'd like to do now is just give an opportunity for Representative Poppy, who is also on the bill with me, and later Representative Delmer, who has a very similar, if not identical, bill to mine, to have an opportunity to speak. But Representative Poppy is here not only because she supports the bill, but my superintendent, who is in Southland Schools, was unable to make it today. So her superintendent and members from her district are going to be here testifying. So I will let Representative Poppy introduce them.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Representative Brown and I do share a Senate district, so we are a legislative district, border each other. We also share students, we share school districts, and in fact we share wind, because we both represent parts of Maurer County, and Maurer County in the southern part and the eastern part actually has a good number of wind turbines. And I'll just say this in depth, because the three of us here are some of the windiest legislators you have in the Minnesota House. And I don't think that you would actually find us being the windiest, but we do have a lot of wind within our district, and Representative Demmer also to the east of us and north a little bit. So we really do have a concern, because we have an opportunity to be able to capture the wind, be able to provide for clean energy for some of our friends, even in the metropolitan area. And we also want to make sure that our school districts are able to fund the needs that they have. and some of those needs are going to be discussed here today concerning science and math education, as well as other kinds of initiatives that we could come forward with if we are able to capture both the wind and the dollars that this revenue will create. So here today, I do have three people from actually my part of the legislative district. The superintendent of Grand Meadow Public Schools is Joseph Brown. We also have Al Spear, who's a farmer and whose property does host the wind turbines. Marlon Fay, who is a Grand Meadow School Board member. So those three people will be able to speak more precisely about what the bill will continue to do for them and for our school districts that we all have.
Thank you very much. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just real generally, I thought we'd let the testifiers go to make sure they can say what they want to say. And then I can follow up with some general comments. But suffice it to say that I'm with my close friends, Representative Brown, Representative Poppy, and we feel strongly about this. And if you want to just pass it on, we can move on. But otherwise, we'll talk about it for a while.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Why don't we get the testifiers up here? And I have Mr. Brown on my list first. Do you want to go on the Mr. Brown, Mr. Spear, and Marlon Fay? Is that the order, Representative Brown?
That would be fine, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, in the name of full disclosure, I do have to say that the gentleman here that I will be calling Mr. Brown is actually my husband, and but one of the strongest spokespersons in the name of wind energy in the area.
Thank you, Representative Brown, and welcome, Mr. Brown.
Thank you.
We've heard a lot about you.
Thank
and
you,
the
Madam
advice
Chair.
You give on not just this issue, but others as well.
I hope that carries positive tenets. Madam Chair, thank you, members of the committee. I am pleased to have this opportunity to speak in support of House File 2559 by Brown, Poppy, Welty, Anderson, Demmer, and others. The effect of this corrective bill is to restore revenue earned through the wind energy production tax to local public schools that was generated through Chapter 279.029 of the Minnesota statutes beginning in fiscal year 2009. Chapter 279.029 was originally passed in 2002, and it was amended in 2005. And it was amended in 2005 in lieu of paying property taxes. In lieu of paying property taxes, wind turbines are assessed a wind energy production tax at the very small rate of 0.12 of a penny per every kilowatt of electricity produced by the system. Revenues collected from these wind turbines were to be distributed to local taxing jurisdictions as follows: 80% to the counties, 14% to the townships and cities where the wind turbines are located, and 6% to school districts. In 2007, Section 12 of House File 2245, the Omnibus Education Act, was passed, and this section reduces the amount of state aid to schools that is generated by the windmill energy production, by the wind energy production tax. In other words, school districts and local residents that were promised additional revenue for their schools will now have this revenue taken away by an equal amount through the reduction of state aid to local public schools. In 2007, Grand Meadow ISD 495 received $3,726 from the windmill energy production tax. In 2008, next month, we are expecting to receive approximately $25,000. And starting in 2009, we are expecting to receive approximately $50,000 per year. In 2007, the Prairie Star Wind Farm, a $180 million project, was constructed in the Southland and Grand Meadow School District. Once again, folks, the $180 million wind farm project pays no property taxes and does not increase the tax capacity of our district. And as Representative Morrow was talking about a few minutes ago, we tried to pass an operating levy last November and it failed by 110 votes. We have very, very limited tax capacity in our district. And in lieu of no property taxes, the wind energy production tax would have helped us out considerably, the $50,000. So 24 of these windmills are actually located in the Southland District, and 34 are located in our school district. XL Energy is currently, if you're driving past Interstate 90 southwest of Rochester in the near future, you'll notice that there are 50 additional windmills sitting on the ground right outside of the windmill restaurant, which is located at the Dexter exit. XL Energy will start constructing an additional 50 windmills in our school district starting in April of 2008. Each of these wind turbines is valued at over $2 million. And even though they have taken farmland out of production through the installation of service roads, and wind turbines. They do not generate any property taxes for our school district. I think I mentioned that more than once. This is a key distinction. This is a key
way for us to retain things.
Thank you very much. It's middle of the week, Chairman. Okay. This is a key distinction between the way that wind turbines and power lines are treated. It's a key distinction between the way power lines and windmills are treated. Let me tell you a little bit about ISD 495 very briefly. We have 370 students. We are an energy-efficient school. We are a new dome school, and thank you for those of you that were here a few years ago and helped us build that brand-new dome school. You're always welcome to come and take a tour. We became the ninth QComp school in the state, the first rural school to do QComp. We implemented all-day, every-day kindergarten 2 years ago, and we are one of the first high schools in the state of Minnesota to require 4 years of math and 4 years of science, starting with the graduating class of 2010. We implemented all-day, every-day kindergarten, increased our math and science requirements in 2006 by using a combined funding of energy savings of our new building, QComp revenue, and the anticipated revenue that we will start receiving from the wind energy production tax in 2008. The legislation that was passed in the last few hours of the session last year takes this additional revenue away from school districts. Our resident farmers are really upset that this change because they were promised when they signed their contracts, they were promised that if they agreed to install these large wind turbines, that their local public schools would receive additional revenue. Each wind turbine takes out over 1 acre of quality farmland, and in the southern part of the state, that is some of the best farmland in the world. It takes a whole acre of quality farmland out of production, and with the footprint and the access roads that lead to each turbine. In fact, Al has a copy of a map. We might just pass that around if we can to show you which of these red lines on this map show you all these additional roads that cut right through the plentiful farmland. Our school board made the decision to require 4 years of math and 4 years of science for our current 10th graders last year. They were counting on this additional revenue to pay for one additional math science teacher at the high school. We are currently just working ourselves out of statutory operating debt as a district, and we will be unable to fund our additional math science teacher in the 08-09 school year without the wind energy production tax revenue. As I mentioned, each wind turbine is valued at $2 million. If Grand Meadow had 87 homes or 87 small businesses valued at $2 million, this would increase our local property tax base, and it would make it easier to pass our operating levy. Since wind turbines do not pay any property taxes, it seems equitable and fair for them to pay the windmill energy production tax to counties, cities, townships, and school districts. One of the reasons that rural school districts find it difficult to maximize our levy authority is that we do not have the property wealth or the property tax capacity of urban school districts. This causes a significant funding disparity between rural and urban school districts. As a rural region, we are thrilled to be able to contribute to a renewable portfolio standard of 25% by 2025. The change in the distribution of the wind energy production tax to school districts has made it more difficult for wind energy developers to obtain approval to develop additional wind farms throughout the state, according to wind energy developers. Let me repeat that once again, folks, because tomorrow when we get as a state the forecast, we need better jobs, we need good jobs in Minnesota. And right now, the wind companies are saying because of that legislation that was passed last May, it is harder for them to get more contracts signed in Minnesota. They recently crossed the border, 14 miles south of Grand Meadow. They recently crossed the border, and they are now installing 300 wind turbines at $2 million apiece in Iowa. In Iowa. They could have easily even put those in Minnesota, but they're having a tough time getting people to sign contracts right now because they know that this money is not helping the local public school. So the $100 or $200 or $1 million that would have gone for additional revenue is probably going to cost the state hundreds of millions of dollars. And so that's one reason I feel so strong about this. Well, in fact, when we look at the first congressional district, I have to point out, this is something I found out in my research, the first congressional district is the fifth windiest congressional district in the country. Now, there's got to be a joke in that someplace. But one of the original selling points of the original statute was that these wind farms would generate additional revenue to school districts in addition to generating additional renewable energy. Wind farms create good-paying jobs for our state. As a rural region, we understand that wind farms will never be installed in the urban areas. There is a local cost associated with the installation of wind farms in the rural community. Wind turbines create a flicker or a strobe light effect on farmers and livestock. They also make a swishing sound when in operation, and a local fire department has had to obtain special equipment to provide emergency support for them, especially when the workers were up in the air 240 feet. These wind turbines have taken quality farmland out of production. The implementation of additional farmland is a win-win for our entire state. The additional $50,000 that would have generated for our district with the installation of 87 wind turbines would add an additional 80 cents per day per student for our district. Without this additional revenue, we will not be able to fund another math science teacher at the high school to fulfill the need to teach additional math and science classes. Due to our proximity to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester and the Hormel Institute in Austin, we understand how important increased math and science standards are for our students. Finally, I've learned as a small school superintendent that I must plan at least 2 years in advance. We made graduation requirements, personnel decisions, and policy decisions based on current state law. We had little to no notice that a change was being proposed in the distribution of the Wind Energy Production Tax in the last few days of the 2007 legislative session. I humbly request that the Wind Energy Production Tax be restored to the rural school districts across the state in a sign of partnership as we work toward to meet the renewable portfolio standards and to provide for a quality educational experience for our rural students. I want to thank you, first of all, for your consideration of this bill, and more importantly, thank you for serving in the Minnesota House of Representatives.
Thank you very much. Mr. Spear, please restate your name for the tape and tell us who you are.
My name is Al Spear. I'm from Grand Meadow. Thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity to speak my mind, I guess. I am a landowner. I'm on the map. I got stuck with three of them by chance. Mm-hmm. They first approached me, I believe it was 2000, it may have been 2001, and showed me this wonderful plan that they had for building windmills. And my first thought was, no, you're not building a road through my farm. And then they showed me how the taxes were going to be broke up and paid. When it was clear that my school could benefit from this, seeing how I tried not to benefit from school most of my life, it looked like a very good idea. I have friends that farm where they're going to build this next one over towards Dexter and Hayfield area, and they're not as enthusiastic about it anymore. And frankly, I'm not as enthusiastic about it either. It's really not going to benefit the school like they told me it was going to. And that's a school is a good place to spend money. It's a very good place. If anyone has any questions, I'd love to answer them if I can.
Thank you very much. We're going to have questions at the end and get all the testimony out, and we do already have a list starting. So,
okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shear. And Mr. Fay, if you could also say your name and for the tape.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Marlon Fay. I serve as a member of the Grand Meadow School Board. I'm also the Vice President of the Mahwah County Farm Bureau. And like Superintendent Brown was saying earlier, we base decisions that we made as a school board on current status of law and amount of revenue that we were projected to get. And so for our budget next year, we've got that money figured in for hiring a new math and science teacher. And we put those regulations in effect for our 2010 graduating class, which both Al and I have daughters in, by the way, and we're very proud of that. We're proud of the facility we have. We're proud of the classes that we can offer as a small school district. And when we heard that the windmill generation tax was going to be pulled from the school districts, we really felt slighted, and obviously we were the ones that were getting the revenue, so we did take it personally. And at first we thought, well, you know, they're just trying to take money away from us. And we tried to look at all the sides of it. And we spent more time talking to more people. As a member of the County Farm Bureau, we talked about that. We actually made it a resolution in our policy book and adopted that resolution at our local county Farm Bureau annual meeting. And we also made it a resolution and adopted it as policy at our state Farm Bureau annual meeting in November. So it's a statewide topic, and a lot of people are affected by it. A lot of people feel strongly about it, and I'm sure that you'll hear from a lot more people on that too. So I thank you for your time, for allowing us to speak, and we'll entertain any questions.
Thank you very much. Do any of the legislators want to make any additional comments before we go to the first questioner?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to make one comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I'll let Representative Demmer speak. But we need to put this into perspective here. Our speakers are talking today about one teacher. And in many cases, we're from districts that are much larger than that. This is a district of about 300 students. So one teacher is a very big deal, and if you would multiply that out in terms of any districts that you might represent, I would just have you consider that.
Thank you. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Well, my comments, I'm going to be a little bit more policy-oriented, I guess, if we could. First of all, I feel very strongly about the need of school districts to be able to plan. And obviously the Grand Meadows School District, as well as other school districts that had these revenues coming, did have that in their plan. And I think there's rationale for keeping that going that way. But having said that, all school districts need money. We know that. I guess I'd like to start out, yes, this was in last year's bill, but I would challenge any of the members of this committee to remember if we ever talked about this issue. I don't think it came up. Mm-hmm. And if it would have come up, I would have been very loud and vocal about that, Madam Chair. So yes, it was in the bill last year. We did not talk about it. We didn't have discussion about that. Pretty big change to not have discussion within our committee and to decide about that. So I learned about it this summer because we missed it in our analysis last year in going through this bill because you can see by the bill, it's literally three words that got added. So we missed that. So we needed to have a hearing about it. And we're doing that now, and I appreciate that. I guess to start out with, I'm going to refer back to some of Mr. Melcher's comments regarding the rationale for why this should be a subtraction away from school revenues. Talk about things like power lines, late payment fees and taxes, public utilities, and that sort of thing. The state, the bottom line is, Madam Chair and members, this is private development. The other things that were being talked about were public, power lines and utilities. They're public type things. This is, yes, it's power going into the public power grid, but this is private development, not unlike, I think Mr. Brown, Superintendent Brown mentioned for $180 million spent on the projects they have. There are hundreds of millions of dollars of investment being made in these. And this is private investment. This is private taxpayer dollars, private individuals taking risks, putting these things up, yes, getting revenues from them, but also taking on the risk of private ownership. That is no different in spirit than anybody building a business of any type and adding to the tax base and the economic base of an area. This is exactly the same thing. And I might add, it's exactly the same thing in property-poor districts. So granted, this is not adding to the tax base, if you will, but it is adding to the economies of the area, and all areas have benefits and things in their area that benefit their schools that maybe some others don't have. And I'm talking primarily about tax base and that sort of thing. There's a price to be paid by the areas. Some of it was mentioned, but in terms of aesthetics, in terms of the problems that farmers have going around these sort of things, this is not all totally beneficial. There's benefits, and you hope to make a profit on it in terms of the good outweighs the bad. But this is definitely a local issue that is a big deal that really transcends, I think, the need of these dollars to go into the public treasury to be divided up by equals. Another thing I might add is, when we talk about not wanting other revenues coming to schools that some schools don't have access to. Members, we have corporations and foundations and gifts going to schools all the time. For example, the Hormel Foundation down in the Austin area will give $2 or $3 million sometimes to the Austin School District to do a certain thing. That doesn't benefit all the schools in the area. That's a benefit they get because they have a certain economic advantage there. Well, that's not unlike these windmills going up here that are supplying some economic benefit, again, to property-poor districts where we know we have, quite frankly, less revenue per student going there. So So there's a huge deal here.
Right.
So I guess the bottom line is that the thing I want to impress upon the committee is, number one, this is private-based development, not unlike any other business that's going up. There are millions of dollars being invested by people privately, and those benefits should go to the areas that that the investors themselves live in, invest in, have children going to, and feel very strongly that this bill should be passed. We should undo what was done, and those revenues should stay in the areas that are putting up with the windmills, if you will, but also putting investment in. So, Madam Chair, those are my comments, and we'd be willing to take any kind of questions.
Thank you, Representative Demmer, and you all have finished your hearing in 22 minutes, so we have even more time for questions. And we have some. Representative Marquardt serves on the Tax Committee, so we're interested to hear your comments.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and appreciate this bill being brought forward. And a few comments, and Representative Demmer, you were, I think, getting to some of the comments that I had, and that, granted, and I was looking at some of the articles here, and I understand the administration's idea of equity. I mean, that is the number one goal throughout. But the fact of the matter of the system is that if we were funding all the potential needs out there, then you could talk about equity. Or if the equalization levies on the referendums or the debt service were moving up so that all schools could qualify for some sort of equalization, then you've got equity. But the fact of the matter is we're not meeting those components, and so you already create some inequities in the system. And the way I look at this, as Representative Demmer does, is that, well, this is a private business, but depending on where you are with the economies in the state, they're going to be a little bit different. In rural Minnesota, you're going to have renewable fuels, or energy is going to be one economic development that you might not have in the metro area, you know, ethanol plants, wind turbines, and so forth. Mm-hmm. Metro down here is going to have the Mall of America, which we could never have in San Metal. You wouldn't attract enough. And when we head back, my wife and daughters always have to stop at that Maple Grove place that's got all those line of shops, Hollisters and all those. You know, you wouldn't be able to do that in Grand Meadow or some of these places. So what I'm trying to say is, because the economies are different, we've got to allow the locals to be able to benefit from those different types of economies. And quite frankly, without having the tax base, and without building on a tax base, it makes it more difficult, as the Superintendent Brown had said, to pass referendums. And there you then create some huge inequities between the haves and the have-nots that come down to property value. So I'm trying to say that I support this bill, Madam Chair, because the economies are going to be different. And in the best system, we want to get equality, but we don't have it just because of some of the things I had mentioned. And so it should be a property tax base. Since it's not, you should be getting some revenues off of that. And there's certainly two sides to it, but I think this is a case where it's a difference between economies, between the rural areas and the metro. And this is something that's going to be huge. Rural Minnesota is going to be the non-renewable or the renewable energy area. So thanks for bringing this bill forward.
Representative Marquardt, since you serve on the Tax Committee, or maybe someone else can answer it too, but when we heard the testifiers, they were saying they were promised, you know, the 6% for schools and so forth, and I myself didn't know they didn't get any property taxes either. Was that the Tax Committee that was promising them this when it was the payment in lieu of taxes? And some background I had said that was Representative Ron Abrams' bill. So do you remember that discussion? Is that been, or maybe not, if you could ask.
This had to have been done before I was on the Tax Committee. He would have never made those promises. No, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Okay. Maybe I could ask anybody up there, who was it that promised the 6% to schools? Was that the people putting up the windmills, or was it somebody from government, or Representative Brown?
Madam Chair, it was Ron Abrams originally, and then based on that, the windmill companies made their promises based on that promise.
So they were just repeating what the government had done. Okay, Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think when we use the word promise, I'm not sure that we can use it in the context that we would use it in every day, that I promised Representative Marquardt that my team will beat his team. But I think in the context here, I think it's because that's what the law was. It was set up that these 6% of this revenue is going to go forward. And when that happens and people make plans, they take that, they do the calculations, and they say, based on what the law is, this is what's going to be coming in. And that's what the facts are. And when that changes, I think we perceive that as a promise broken. Well, none of us look them in the eye and say, we promise this will always be there. Because there's been lots of other changes in tax code that have, I suppose you could say, they broke promises. But we're not going to talk about them. With this one.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. And I just pointed out, if I would only look in my packet, there's a memo here from Mr. Strom on this topic as well. We have three more people at the moment. So Representative Faust, then Representative Grappolo, then Representative Morrow. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is Superintendent Brown, you mentioned several expenses that the local communities have incurred because of the windmill. For example, the fire department had to do some special training. Are there any expenses or added expenses that any of the school districts have had to incur because of these windmills?
Superintendent Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Not specifically, no.
Okay, Representative Grappolo.
Madam Chair, members, first of all, I want to make a couple comments. My comments are going to be a little more pointed because we've got members of both sides of the aisle up here, so I can be fair and be critical of this. First of all, there's been some suggestions here that somehow this provision slipped in. This is one of the numerous nightmares the Senate slipped in the last day of session and rolled over the House on. That's just totally false. This provision was the governor's recommendation. It was in the House omnibus bill. It went totally through the process. It was discussed in committee. This is nothing new to anyone who's read the bill. So that should not be a surprise. Second of all, Representative Marquardt, you're a tax committee expert. You certainly know more about it than me. And Madam Chair, if I could just ask a question of the highest respected.
Please, and you are accurate in your statement.
So I'm hearing this, and we're hearing about how there's no property wealth there. Why don't we just have property taxes levied on these windmills then, and then the school districts get the revenue just like other property taxes? Why don't we, why isn't that happening?
Representative Marquardt, do you want to answer that?
Madam Chair, first of all, before I answer that, I do have information. Now, it looks like it was 2006 that was in law of 2005, effective for 2006, that distribution was set up as 80% to counties and so forth. So, and then to Representative Grappolo, I don't know for sure the history of when it deals with like power lines and all those type of things. What the rationale why some were under property taxes and one they charged a fee or something. I don't know what the rationale is behind that.
Representative Grappolo.
And Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt is actually wasn't fair to you to put that on you, but I'll offer my own theory about why there isn't a property tax payment there. Because if there's a property tax payment there, the property tax owner is paying it and going to the school. That's not what people want here. What they want is they want people outside the districts paying revenue into their school districts. So the people in Representative Swales, Representative Dietrich, and Representative Garofalo's districts are paying an energy tax that is then funneled preferentially to the school district. That's what this is. This is not an issue of fairness. I apologize that people didn't understand that this was in the bill. This was there. This is not a surprise. Okay? This is, again, example 2000. And again, I'm saying it because it's bipartisan representation up there. This is another example of having someone else pay the bills locally. If we're concerned about local school districts and lack of revenue, you put a property tax on it. Instead of coming back to the people in my district to pick out these special geographic areas throughout the state that are bipartisan. That is the other side of the story, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grappolo. And I'm going to recognize Representative Demmer just briefly, and because we do have three more people on the list I want to be sure to get to. So, Representative Demmer.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Grappolo is wrong. He's just plain wrong. These revenues are coming from the production of energy of the windmills that are owned by private individuals. They are paying the tax. You are not paying the tax. You are paying the tax because you're buying power. But you pay the tax of every company that you ever buy their product from. The tax that this is generating, these windmills are generating tax off the production that they are producing, built by private dollars. This is privately generated dollars by people that own those windmills, that live in those districts, and you are not paying that.
And we're going
to... very briefly to that point. Very briefly.
We're going to draft low, like, two sentences.
Well, it'll be close. Because, you know, Representative Demmer, you own a small business, and we raise taxes on your business, you don't pay the tax. The customers do. It's the same logic you and I apply to increases in the commercial industrial tax and income taxes. It's the same thing. The businesses pass this on to the ratepayers. It's the exact same thing.
Thank you, Representative Bracco. Cal, once we get the budget deficit tomorrow, we're going to be really having fun here at the legislature. Because when there's not enough money to go around and taxes are going up, we get very passionate. And everyone is passionate about our students. So, Representative Morrow, Representative Mansell, and Benson. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Bracco, I actually agree with much of what you've just said. And then here comes the but. It was Mr. Spears' testimony, I think, that really speaks to me. He was told something. He made a commitment. His land use was changed. He did something for the good of his local school district, and then the rules changed afterwards. And that's what concerns me. And whether Mr. Spears, whether you should have known, whether someone should have told you that the rules can change on you a year later or not, I'm not getting into that right now. I'm simply saying I support this bill because you have made a commitment in the state to keep that commitment. It does cost my school district. But I don't consider my school district being robbed.
Representative Enzelt, I think you started all this with the taconite tax.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I thought I was really developing a grip on this issue until I listened to you, Representative Garofalo, but I have to say that I'm really supportive of what you all are trying to do, but for different sets of reasons, I suppose. It was many, many years ago that the concept of taxing production of a natural resource was a very, very radical idea. But it's been in place on the Iron Range with our natural resource, taconite, for almost 40 years, and it works. And I especially like what you all are doing in taxing production of another natural resource, which is wind, which really and truly belongs to all of us, and you're attaching it to the future, to kids. I admire that, and we absolutely should support this.
Otherwise, we'll have to get rid of the taconite tax, because you know I'm on a big... I'm on a big reform mission to treat everybody equally based on
no.
Me, and that taconite tax is definitely an inequity. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really was going to say pretty much what Representative Morrow had just said, because I think if a promise is made, a promise should be kept. And we saw that same issue being debated last year having to do with certain subsidies for the production of ethanol. And I remember the argument being made that even though certain of these companies were now making a profit, that the state had promised to provide subsidies for a number of years, and we certainly weren't going to go back on a state's promise. The other reason I wanted to make a comment is that Representative Abrams, who is my predecessor, I won't tell my Democratic colleagues how many times I voted for Representative Abrams as my representative, but he was chairman of the Tax Committee and a very competent representative, I think most everyone would agree. And if he convinced the state legislature that this program should have gone into effect, I think he probably had some pretty good reasons for thinking that. And so I also support Representative Demmer and Representative Brown's proposal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Anyone else that's not on the list? Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do agree that is a concern of mine, that you know, this is what the deal was, and then all of a sudden we changed that. But unfortunately, we have a history of that. I've got two schools that have maximum equity loans, and after they signed the contracts, the very next year, the state starts, you know, has more than doubled how much they have to pay on those now. And so it isn't like the only time that the state has ever changed their mind on this type of thing.
Representative, I think we could all agree with that statement if you look at the past history, and we could also all agree about Representative Abrams, Representative Benson. And I spent some time voting for Representative John Rose in Roseville, who was also a Republican who preceded me. Okay, we have Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, we have to look at ourselves because we're the ones who changed the law. So, Representative Faust, you know, those of us who preceded you, you know, we sometimes voted against or voted for some of these changes. But I remember the controversy that centered around the wind energy issue when I served on the Energy Commission. So I'm not surprised that we've had some of this turmoil because I think we're just probably finally figuring out some of the nuances that we so unwittingly put in. And I know Representative Abrams had to compromise on this because he talked about it in caucus. So, you know, I think what we need to do is straighten out this or clarify whatever the problem is, and we're either going to or not going to follow what was in statute previously to last year. And I agree with Representative Garofalo. This came from the governor, and we should have known it was there.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And I will just say I've been, you know, very, I think it's very compelling, this hearing that we have. I did not know that these districts did not get property taxes. The payment in lieu was what was agreed upon. I am not persuaded that we always have to be consistent because we never are. And I have to say honestly, and Representative Brown knows this, that I supported the governor's proposal last year because it's a small amount of money right now. And I do agree with Representative Garofalo that it is not good policy to start having, you know, patchwork things in various districts. I also agree that we have haves and have-nots with the system that we do have right now. And we're working very hard to long-term work on that for the funding. But this provision started in the tax committee, and it seems to me it was even in the tax bill last year that was vetoed to fix this. Wasn't it, Representative Marquardt? Am I wrong about that? It wasn't. Okay, I'm wrong about that. Again. you know, there's a lot of things that other committees do that we don't keep track of. And I always think when we try to make our this committee's work equitable, often we're undone by other committees like the tax committee. But what is most troublesome to me of all about this is that we already do the taconite tax. And so I'm going to have to think about this, and I think I hear the sense of the committee, but for my own personal vote, I'm not sure. You know, I know that it's a small amount of money, and that was the governor's reasoning. While it is a small amount of money, let's do the right policy thing, but we aren't consistent with that with districts all around the state, and I don't think that's fair either. So I'm just going to have to sift through this for myself, but I'm very glad that we had a comprehensive hearing. We did talk about it last year, but I don't think any of us totally understood all the ramifications if we do right now even. But I appreciate your bringing this forward, and we don't even know if we have a bill this year. We're waiting on better direction. We're waiting on the forecast. We're waiting on a lot of things, but we'll definitely have this before us at that time. And does anybody here that up at the table want to make any final comments before we adjourn? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, my last comment again. Madam Chair, nobody in your district invested in these windmills. The people that live in these districts invested in these windmills and should get the benefit of them. That's my response. These are privately owned, invested in, built by. If not for the people living in these districts, these windmills would not exist for you to be trying to take some of their revenues away from.
So that's
private investment in that area.
I'm going to go on a positive note, I think, with Representative Poppy, but I will just say that districts like mine and Representative Grappolo, Representative Dietrich, and Representative Benson, and you know, send a lot of our money from our districts all around the state every year, and you get a lot of it. So that's not a good argument. Don't make that one with me. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I really do appreciate the opportunity to come before you today and be able to really have this heard, because I think there were some questions about it and people didn't necessarily understand. Representative Demmer talked a little bit about a situation in Austin. I represent the city of Austin, and the Hormel Foundation did recently donate $2.3 million to that school district to provide for additional education for their math and science teachers and an upgrade of their math and science in the school, the rooms there. And that is an unprecedented kind of partnership that's being done through the foundation, through the school district, and through the University of Minnesota. It's outstanding, and it's something that the school district in Austin is very proud of. But I also will say it really kind of adds to that inequity question that we have, that we are trying to say, this isn't going to solve this. This isn't going to make it so out of balance that it, you know, throws it out of whack. But we're hoping that you would seriously consider what the impact is to the small school districts and how a very small amount really does make a huge difference to the small school district. But thank you so much for the opportunity today.
Thank you, Representative Poppy, and that was a positive note to adjourn on. The meeting's adjourned.